Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This month, Pardes is bringing Elul to you. Let's dive in.
Hi, this is Rachel Berkovitz coming to you from Jerusalem. We are doing Unit 8 of 20, in which we are learning together all the Mishnayot of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, and we are in the middle of the second chapter. As you remember, when we started the chapter, it was discussing the witnesses coming and the problems that arose when that happened. And then we took the little segue break to describe the process by which the torches were lit and the information of when the new month went out to the diaspora, right? And we had this beautiful picture that was painted of torch to torch, mountain to mountain, until the entire diaspora was lit up below with the sort of all the torches of all the different Jewish communities, possibly standing on mountains, possibly standing on the valley. I don't fully know the topography of it. And it was a beautiful image of uniting them together and maybe also sending that message back towards the last lighters of the bonfire that the diaspora has heard and knows. And now we're going to jump back in our Mishnayot to the witnesses once again, right? So now we're back. We're not in the diaspora anymore. We're back in Israel, and we're going to find ourselves in Jerusalem. And so Mishnah Hey 5 says, Chatzer Gdola Haita B'Yerushalayim. There was a large courtyard in Jerusalem. Ubeit Ya'azek Haita Nikret. And it was called Beit Ya'azek. Okay, and the Gemara tries to ask, does this word mean anything? Was it just called that? The Gemara suggested that maybe it was, Ya'azek can mean like surrounded in some way, around, and that it was surrounded by a wall. Obviously, a courtyard could be surrounded by a wall. Ya'azek also means cultivate. It's usually what you do to the ground, you cultivate the ground. But I think that what we're going to see here, if the word has any meaning, maybe it's just what it was called, we're going to see definitely that this is part of the procedure to cultivate witnesses to come. We already saw in the first chapter that we really want to encourage witnesses to come, even if possibly they're not going to be actually needed. And that theme is continuing here. So what happens? Ulasham kol ha'edim mitkansim, and to this great courtyard that existed in Jerusalem, it is into here that all the witnesses would gather. Ubeitin botkim otam sham, and that is where the court would check them or test them or see about their testimony. It would happen here. And in a second, in the next Mishnah, we're going to get a description of how that checking happened. Usu'udot gedolot osin lahem, and they would do for them massive meals, feasts. Bishvil shiyu rigilim lavo, right? So that they would be ragil, they would be accustomed to come, right? And we have this lavo that has been running throughout the whole entire tractate, right? We want them to come. We want to encourage them to come. So if when they get there, there's a big party going on and they're treated really well, like royalty, then they're going to be happy. Even if in the end, it's not their own testimony that's needed, but the experience is going to be a positive one. And they're going to want to each time come back and come back and come back. It will become a regular process for them. Okay, so that's the description. That's the description. But now we find out that this rosy picture isn't as rosy as we thought, because there's some problems. And the text continues, Mishnah Hay continues, Berishona, originally, at first. And this Berishona, right, is going to link us back to Mishnah 1 and Mishnah 2 of the chapter. There, too, we had a Berishona at first. And then they had to make a decree to fix something that went wrong after the at first. And here, too, we're going to see a similar structure. So the language of hey, even though we had that digression in the middle of the description of how the torches went out, how the masuot went out, the language is bringing us back to a structure that had twice before the phrase berishona and then a decree. So berishona lo hayu zazim misham kol hayom. At first, they, the witnesses, would not move from there, from that great big courtyard that was in Jerusalem, all day long. Now we have to understand what's being talked about. So what's being talked about is we're still on the theme that, if I remind you, was the theme at the end of chapter one and carried over to the beginning of chapter two. It was implied. And that theme is, we're talking about when the witnesses come on Shabbat. We're talking about when the witnesses come on Shabbat. And we know that they are allowed to violate Shabbat to get to Yerushalayim, which we talked about the power of that idea. But one of the challenges that happens is one of the violations of Shabbat is that there are certain rules, and it's a dispute if it's a biblical rule or a rabbinic rule and how big, but you're not allowed to. One of the ways you do Shabbat, you rest, you cease, is that you don't do massive travels, and you're not supposed to, there's just a limit to how far outside your city you're supposed to travel on Shabbat, and you're not supposed to cross that line. You're not supposed to break the Tchum Shabbat, the dividing line. Now, to get to Yerushalayim, if you're going to give testimony, you're allowed to travel farther than that limitation. But the rule is that once someone then gets out of the Tchum Shabbat and travels that far, they're basically not allowed to move after that. They're stuck there. And they inside the courtyard, they can move around. But once they go outside the courtyard, in theory, they're not allowed to move because they don't belong to the new city they have. And it's Shabbat and they can't get back to where they're going. So we have this awkward situation where everyone came and they're in this courtyard and we're trying to entertain them, big festivities, but the reality is they can't move. And what's interesting about this phrase, lo hayu zazim, they didn't move from there all day, is this word zazim, because we had the word zaz in Mishnah Dalet with the man making the signal on the top of the hill, right there. It says he wouldn't move from there, right? He wouldn't move until he would wait until he would see the entire Gola, entire diaspora lit up before him like a bonfire. And right, in fact, what's interesting here is we had the same phrase in Gimel and Dalet, we had the same terminology that he's signaling back and forth, up and down, side to side with his torch, and he's waiting to see if the guy on the next hill would see it, right? And in Mishnah Dalet, we said he's signaling and he's waiting to see the whole Gola. And the difference is between the two phrases that in one, it says that he doesn't move until he sees it, and that's Mishnah Dalet. And that connects us here to Mishnah Hay, which was on a completely different topic, right? We're back to the Eidim, we're back in Yerushalayim, but we have that same phrase, he didn't move. They didn't move. And the irony is this terminology, right? People don't move for different reasons. When it was the torch bearer, he didn't move from there. That showed his like steadfastness. That showed his commitment. That showed his perseverance to make sure that the entire diaspora got the message that everyone knows and that he can bring the news possibly back to Jerusalem to say, yep, they all saw it. They got it. They know when Rosh Chodesh is. Here, the situation is the opposite. Everyone's come. We've gotten the news. We know what the witnesses are going to say. We're going to find out in a second when they testify. And now they're stuck there. They can't move, right? This is not about perseverance. This maybe is more about frustration. They're not allowed to move because they got like trapped there on Shabbat. They're trapped there on Shabbat and they can't go. And that, if we're thinking about, is this going to be a deterrent for them to come? Remember, our whole goal of this mission is to say, we don't want them to be deterred. Being stuck there, being not be able to move and being stuck in a courtyard all day with people, not be able to get home or not be able to visit your friends or relatives that are in Yerushalayim once you finally made it there, could be a deterrent. And we're going to see Rabban Gamliel HaZaken realizes this. So it says, Hitkin Rabban Gamliel HaZaken, Shayu Mehalchin Alpayim Ama L'chol Ruach. So Rabban Gamliel the elder made a decree. Once again, we have a fix. We have that word fix. Rabban Gamliel the elder, there's a chain of the heads of the Jewish people. It's a father to son chain, in theory, going back to David HaMelech. And they keep naming after the grandfather. So there's a number of Rabban Gamliels. The Rabban Gamliel you might have heard of, if you've heard of him, is actually his grandson, Rabban Gamliel de Yavna. This is the Rabban Gamliel the elder, and he dies at about the year 52 after the Common Era. So we're talking when the temple is still standing, we're talking in Jerusalem, and he realizes that there's a problem of them being stuck there all day. And so he permits them to travel from the city limits, Alpayim Amma, which is about 2,000 Amot. Amma is from your like forefinger to your elbow about, which calculations that I read says is about a kilometer. If you're in miles, there's 2.2 miles to a kilometer. So I guess it's half a mile or so. That is sort of the extension that he's letting them move. So they're not stuck. It can mean that they could travel inside Yerushalayim, or they could travel partial of the way home, or if they came from cities close to Yerushalayim, right? If you came really far away, you can't get back home. But if you came from a town neighboring Yerushalayim, you could get back home on Shabbat. And this switch that he did, we're going to see it in the language of the Mishnah in a second, it's that he really made them be B'nai Yerushalayim, townspeople, citizens of Yerushalayim. Because the law of Shabbat is that every person is allowed to go from the outskirts of their town, this Alpayim Abba. That's what you're allowed to travel on Shabbat. The issue is if you just traveled on Shabbat and you get to a new place, then that new place, you're not allowed to move from it. And so the like decree that he made is he turns them into people of Yerushalayim. And we're going to see that language in a second here in the Mishnah. So he allows them to go 2,000 amot in every direction. Velo ela belvad, and not only the witnesses does he do this, but he makes also a decree that applies to other people, not on Kiddush HaChodesh, not when we're sanctifying the new moon. And he gives the list. Here are some other people this new rule applies to, that if they came to Yerushalayim, or came to, now it's not just Jerusalem, another city that isn't their normal city on Shabbat, that they'll be able to then do some traveling backwards. And it says, ela af hachachma haba'a lileid, haba latzil min hadleka, umin hagayis, umin hanahar, umin hamapolet. Also, now this is a really interesting phrase, and we're going to see some remnants of this further on in our Mishnah. The wise woman who comes to deliver a birth, i.e. the midwife. I tried to research the usage of calling a midwife a chachama, a wise woman, and I see, apparently, I do not speak these languages, but in French and in German, midwife, the word also means wise woman. And wise, she knows the ways of birth and the ways to deliver and the ways of nature, which is a science and something that one has to acquire the information about. So let's say a midwife comes to a new town to help someone give birth on Shabbat. She might be deterred from doing that, and we want her to, if she's going to be stuck there on Shabbat and not be able to travel back or not being able to move once she gets there. So we apply this rule that she'll also be able to go Alpayim Amah in every direction. And the same goes for someone who comes to save someone from a fire. Here we have the word dlika, right? A moment before we had the imagery of ish, and that was powerful, positive imagery of fire, of the bonfire and of the torches. Here we have an image of a destructive fire and someone's life need to be saved, or to be saved from armies, invading armies or thugs or some type of issue like that, which is life-threatening, or to save someone from a flood or from a river specifically, maybe a flooding river, or to save someone from something collapsing. I don't know if it's an earthquake or specifically a building collapsing on someone, right? So all these people, they were allowed to desecrate Shabbat, travel to this person to save a life or to prevent death. And they too won't be stuck there. Ella, hare elu kanshei ha'ir. These people are considered like the people of the towns. They can become part of the town. V'hesh lehem alpayim amah l'kol ruach. And they have 2,000 amot in every single direction. Right. So here we have something very interesting. First of all, if we're thinking about like the concept of unity, which has definitely been a theme throughout the chapter. Right. If you come and are willing to save people's lives. Right. That, first of all, desire to save people's lives is something that shows social responsibility between peoples. And that then makes you part of my town, and it unifies you. And then because you're unified, you're getting the privileges of the Shabbat walking that was appointed to me who lives there. We also see something really, really interesting by saying that he made this decree for all these other people, right? It's saying something quite powerful about the witnesses, right? I totally understand that I want people to come and save you from death or to even produce life, right? But to equate coming to sanctify the new moon with that, is sanctifying the new moon a life-saving procedure? Is sanctifying the new moon what brings life to the Jewish people? It seems to be that from a theological perspective, by making a comparison between the two, those ideas are being suggested here, which is very powerful and interesting. And we have to think about it as we continue to learn through. The other thing that is interesting here, sort of the imagery that we have, right? We have an image at the beginning of the Mishnah of everyone converging on this chatzer, right? And last chapter, I talked about, like, it's all these people coming to Yerushalayim, right? They're all coming into the chatzer, but then they get stuck. And then the description of going 2,000 amah b'chol ruach is them, like, coming out in all directions. So we have converging in, I'm doing the hand motions, and then going out, which in some ways was the imagery that we also saw with witnesses converging in, and then the information about the new month going out. So we have that image again. Now that they're there, the Mishnah continues in Mishnah Vav to say, like, how did they test the witnesses? What information did they get through them? Ketzad bokim ata edin, zug ba rishon, ubodkim ata rishon. So how did they check the witnesses? How did they test them? The first, it was a first come, first serve basis. The first zug, right, which by the way means those guys who are traveling from far are probably not going to be the first ones to get asked, right? The first couple comes in, the first pair comes in, those are the ones we check first. What do? We separate the pair. Umachnisim et hagadol shebehem v'omrim lo. Amor, ketzad reita et halavana. So we take in the gadol, the big of them. I don't know if that means the elder in age or the wiser of the two. So I separate the pair. I have a pair that came together. I separate them to see if they have the same information. And I say to him, tell us, how did you see? And here we have the sea, the livana, the moon. And then we ask, we don't just ask a general question, we start to ask specific questions. Okay, and bear with me. I tried to understand the astronomy of this. I don't have it down 100%, but you'll get the picture. And then they ask specific questions. Lifnei hachama o lachar hachama? Did you see it in front of the? And chama, which literally means warm, is the rabbinic word for sun. Or after the sun? Litzfona o ledroma? Did you see it to the north of her, the sun, or to the south of her? Kama haya gova ulayin haya note? How wide was the crescent? And which direction did it tilt, right? It's a half moon. Which way is that half moon tilting? Kamahaya gova. What is its height, right? How high is it from the horizon, right? There's the horizon and I see the sun, moon in the sky. How close is it to the horizon? How high is it? And which way is it tilting? But kamahaya rochva, how wide is the crescent? Like, right? And each night the crescent is getting wider and wider and wider. Okay, and then it says, v'im amar lifnei hachama lo amar klum. And if the answer that they tell us the answer to one of these questions, and they say if they said it was in front of the sun, they didn't say anything, i.e. their testimony isn't good. Okay, let me try to explain what I know. This is what I looked up and what I understand, right? The moon is small at the beginning of the month, gets bigger, 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 full at the 15th, gets smaller, 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 smaller. So the little crescent of last month's end of the moon looks very, very similar to the little crescent of this month's new moon. And we want to make sure that they saw this month's new moon and not last month's old little small crescent. And part of how I can figure out that they're seeing the new moon is where the new moon is located in the sky. Okay, so the old moon, the little bit of last month's moon, is going to be in the western sky. And it's going to be very, very close to the horizon. And in fact, it's so close to the horizon that the moon sets, the old moon sets before the sun sets. And that gives a perception like it's in front of the sun. Whereas the new moon crescent is a little bit farther away from the horizon and it sets a little later in the night. And so the sun sets first and then it's a short period that you see it in the sky, but it sets after the sun sets, and so therefore it looks like it's behind the sun. If you understood that, great. If you didn't, what you need to know is this question about before, in front of, or after the sun is trying to figure out, did I see the little crescent of the old moon or the new moon? And if I, the witness, answered, I saw it before the sun, it means I really saw the old moon, and I know 100% that they didn't see the new moon. That question is why that one comes back and says, if he gives this answer, it's wrong. He didn't say anything. The other questions, like to the north, to the south, how high above the horizon and which way it was tilting, my understanding is that those things vary throughout the year. To the north and to the south, the new moon is always in the west. So north of that would be to the right of it, and south of it would be to the left of it. And that is called the moon's latitude. And at certain times, I guess when it's more northern, then the latitude is greater possibly, and the crescent is greater, and you can see it better if it's to the south, and possibly maybe that happens in the winter, the south. I don't know if it's connected to the seasons. I think it is, but you get the point. Those are things that change upon time of year. The rabbis that are asking it know what the right answer is, and they're judging based on what they saw, if it makes sense according to nature. Okay. And it says, so that's the questions they ask the first guy. He gives answers. If the answers are okay, achar kach hayu machnisim et hasheni v'bodkim oto, then they take the second guy in and check him. V'im nimtzu divrehim mechuvanim, if they find that their words are directed to each other, right? They're the same. They're nachon. They're correct. Edutehim kayemet. Then the testimony stands. It's good testimony, and we could sanctify the new month, which is going to happen in the next Mishnah. But before we get to that, what about all these other guys waiting in the courtyard? So the Mishnah finishes, Ushar kol hazugot sholim otam roshei dvarim. And all the rest of the pairs that are waiting there, we ask them, and here's another use of the word rosh, we ask them, roshei dvarim, the heads of things, the main points. We don't like say you didn't come for nothing. We still get like ask some general basic questions. So as if that we cared about what testimony they gave, right? And that's what it says here. Lo shayu tzukim lahem, not because we needed their testimony. Ela kadei shelo yetzu b'pachei nefesh, so that they won't go out. And this word is an idiom. Pach really means a trap, and nefesh means your soul, but that your soul will be trapped. They won't go out disappointed, that they won't be frustrated. And then we repeat the same phrase that we had in the Mishnah before, Bishvil shiyu regilim lavo, so that they'll be used to, that they'll be regular to come. Right? So we have this whole 5 and 6 is a description of the witnesses coming and what happens in Yerushalayim. But our main goal is to say, please, we want to make sure you come. It's so essential that you come. We need you to come. And I don't know if there's a play, this is a little drashi, and I'll end with this, right? That they should be regilim lavo, that they should be used to coming. Right. And last chapter, I talked about the comparison of the regel, the ones that go up on the pilgrimage, and their regel was that people are walking to Yerushalayim. And I felt like there was this imagery of all these witnesses coming to Yerushalayim, and it's a big party, like on the pilgrimage festivals. That's what they're seemingly creating for them. And then we want them, regil is used to, like I do it over and over again. It's a different root. It's the same letters, but a different play. I want them to be coming on their regal, and I want them to be used to and cyclically coming. I don't know if there's a play here on those ideas. Okay, tomorrow we'll finally get to sanctify the new moon.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty, and thank you to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in at the beginning of each week to stay on track with your Elul learning, and visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about Pardes and our programs.